I see this lady who was hypertensive, well-controlled prior to ibrutinib, required more antihypertensive medication.
Yeah.
Is that something you see with ibrutinib? Do you see people developing hypertension who never had it?
Yeah, so probably hypertension's the one side effect that increases in time with ibrutinib therapy. It's not a big proportion, but it's a proportion that increases. Many of the side effects with ibrutinib are quite transient, go away. I'll tell a lot of people that, you know, things like the GI upset, mild rashes, you know, some joint pains, those are things which can go away. The atrial fibrillation tends to occur really early or doesn't. Hypertension is the one feature that I certainly see increasing in numbers and in severity of the patients. And I certainly, one of the features with many of my ibrutinib patients is, of course, I'm not seeing them so often. I'm giving them a 3-month prescription at a time and sending them off. So I'm always telling my patients' own general practitioners to monitor people's blood pressure. Second reason, of course, is that it's stressful for people to be coming into the cancer center. Monitoring their blood pressure every 3 months when somebody's had to struggle to get into the cancer center and they find it all stressful isn't the most ideal way of monitoring people's blood pressure. So I kind of actively involve patients' own practitioners in terms of saying, just be aware that this is a signal you've got to look for and think that you may have to increase the antihypertensive therapy.
What's the putative mechanism of the hypertension that you see?
Nobody really is clear. It's probably an off-target kinase effect. It's probably not mediated by BTK itself. The issue is whether or not next generation BTK inhibitors will have exactly the same features as something that we'll have to see. But at the moment, it's probably thought to be an off-target effect.
And this lady, any evidence of bleeding? One thing you hear about are people getting bruising on her arms. Did she have that?
She is certainly aware that if she knocks herself, even kind of a little minor knock, she'll notice some early bruising. That can be a concern for some people. This particular lady here, she's just like, oh, yeah, I'm a bit clumsy. I just notice there. I know it doesn't do me any harm. But absolutely, this kind of easier bruising. And of course, some of these elderly ladies have kind of thinner skins and tended to bruise more easily even without ibrutinib, so it can be an even bigger problem in this kind of patient population.
So she sounds kind of like, you know, myeloma, they talk about the very elderly and the elderly, and she sounds like, you know, pretty good shape, you know, 75 years old.
Yeah.
She has some other things. So what about chemoimmunotherapy? Did you discuss that with her? For example, you know, one of the regimens that's used in older people is obinutuzumab, chlorambucil. What about that? And also the advantage, and how did she see it in terms of shorter therapy?
Sure. So I always have a conversation with people in this kind of setting about, you know, you've got two choices. You've got a fixed duration of therapy, or you've got, you know, the continuous therapy. And I guess in my own mind, I'm kind of pushing it a little bit less, because what's also clear, of course, is we see much better results with the ibrutinib frontline than we see using it for relapse. So in patients like this, in whom the funding isn't going to be an issue because she's got good insurance that's fully covering the drug and has full access to it, that doesn't become a factor for her particular circumstance. And I'm kind of feeling more and more that, you know, for these sorts of patients, ibrutinib can really be the answer here.